The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter, and you have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Essence Magazine, September 2019 edition. And on the cover of this edition is Serena Williams, and we're going to be discussing the art of making an impact. So let's go ahead and get started. Beginning anew. The start of each month offers a fresh perspective, new possibilities. For this, the ninth month of 2019, we're focusing on freedom of self, rebirth of spirit, and of course, a love of style. Our September issue, which I like to think of as a fashion Bible, reflects those feelings and is the perfect addition to unveil our redesign. As you can imagine, creating these pages has been both a thrill and a labor of love for our talented team. At first glance, you'll see that we've spruced up our look. We've also upgraded the Essence experience by way of our digital platforms, from behind the scenes videos of our photo shoots and international travels to our roster of podcasts, which now feature interview clips from our cover stories and exclusive talks with visionaries from the realms of entertainment and beauty, business and politics, and so much more. What hasn't changed is our commitment to showcasing Black women and all of our splendor with an energy, grace, and power that's unique to us. That commitment makes Serena Williams our perfect cover subject. And when she allowed Brooklyn-based Nigerian-bred artist Lalu New York City to use her face as a canvas, it was a beautiful bonus. For more than two decades, we've cheered for Serena from the sidelines. Most recently, we've watched her life expand as a family woman and entrepreneur. As she shared with entertainment director Corey Murray, the tennis ace has always loved fashion, so much so that when she launched her independently owned self-titled clothing line, she made it her mission to create styles that flatter women of all shapes and sizes and promote body positivity. It's a bold and necessary move, one that speaks to Serena's role as a leader on and off the tennis court. And of course, we co-sign her hashtag, Be Seen, Be Heard. Though it's been nearly 2 months since our 25th Essence Festival, in many ways, we're still in celebration mode. After previewing our inaugural fashion house in New Orleans over the July 4th weekend, we can't wait to bring that three-day experience to life once again. It goes without saying that fashion is a feeling, as well as a way of life. Beauty is too. As Black women, we are a presence. Our style and our culture are not trends. Our influence defies geography and imprints the larger culture. This we know, and we're proud to illustrate it throughout this issue with models, designers, and photographers from all walks of life and all the U.S., South Africa, the Caribbean, Europe, and Africa, along with featuring the informative Cool Girls Guide to Paris. When I saw Lena on screen in Port Authority, I knew she'd be perfect for this issue too. Essence is not only a global brand, but a powerful moment. We're as proud to continue making waves as we are to be making strides throughout the world. It is our honor to be taking this journey with you. In love, always, Manu Lu. So the first article that we're going to go over today, or the first story, I should say, is in the spotlight in honor of Octavia Butler. Butler is credited with being the creator of Afrofuturism for good reason. In 2000, I made my way up the walkway of a house outside of Seattle with my husband, author Stephen Barnes, to see his longtime friend Octavia Butler. We were greeted by the sound of Motown music blasting through the windows. We had to knock hard to be heard. Octavia answered the door, apologizing. "I listen to music when I write," she said. And so began our 90-minute visit, which Steve and I recorded to write an article about her. I had met Octavia and Steve only 3 years earlier at a Black science fiction, fantasy, and horror conference at Clark Atlanta University. For much of that visit, I listened to her in rapt awe while I marveled at where I was sitting, embraced by books, cramming the shelves, being served lentil soup and French bread by the Octavia Butler. With her 6-foot height and deep, distinctive voice that made listeners lean in to hear her every carefully chosen word. Octavia was a giant in life, and her power and impact have continued to grow since her death in 2006. A television series based on her novels about telepaths is in development at Amazon Prime Video, and her papers are housed within the palatal walls of the Huntington Library Art Collections and the Botanical Gardens in San Marino. Her collection is not far from where she grew up in Pasadena, but it's a universe away from the humble beginnings that framed her childhood. Butler, who would have turned 72 on June the 22nd, is often called the mother of Afrofuturism, or Black speculative fiction, also known as science fiction, fantasy, and horror. Long before my novels about African immortals that begin with My Soul to Keep, Ryan Coogler's Black Panther, or the sci horror of Jordan Peele's Get Out, Butler was writing Black women into imaginary worlds with aliens, giving us powers of telepathy and sending us back to the slavery era to try to fix a horribly broken past. Afrofuturism, which spans literature, music, art, and film, is Black artists' proclamation of I am, I was, and I will be, straddling genres and styles to create Black art that imagines a world not quite our own. Future or Afrofuturism is space travel, superheroes, sorcerers, and seers. Afrofuturism is the audacity to imagine a thriving future for Black people, or even future, or any future, I should add. Often, Afrofuturism travels across time to evoke the past, present, and future in one snapshot, like Julie Dash's brilliant film, Daughters of the Dust. Butler, who became the first science fiction writer of any race or gender to win a MacArthur Foundation Fellowship Genius Award in 1995, had a mighty high mountain to scale. Raised in poverty by a single mother in a society waiting to ignore her, Butler created herself and her wide legacy in a true-life act of science fiction. She was oppressively shy, but her voice as a writer rang loud. Her fans include everyone from singer and actress Janelle Monáe to African futurist Nnedi Okafor and Wanuru Kuhu, who are co-writing Amazon Prime's videos Wild Seed series with Viola Davis, co-producing singers Toshi Reagan and Bernice Johnson Reagan of Sweet Honey and The Rock composed an entire opera based on Butler's Parable of the Sower. A graphic novel adaptation of Butler's time travel tale, Kindred, created by Damian Duffy and illustrated by John Jennings, won a Bram Stoker Award last year. An activist, Adrienne Marie Brown's book, Emergent Strategies Shaping Change, Changing Worlds, draws directly from Butler's philosophies. Whenever we try to envision a world without war, without violence, without prisons, without capitalism, we are engaging in speculative fiction. Activist and author Walida Amarisha wrote in her introduction to the book Octavia's Brood, Science Fiction from Social Justice Movement, which she co-edited with Adrienne Marie Brown. All organizing is a science fiction. But Butler is no longer here to see her legacy grow. 6 years after our visit in 2006, she passed away. None of us had any idea during that long, pleasant afternoon that her remaining time would be a short, but even then we saw glimpses of the rising wave of Black speculative art today's readers and moviegoers are enjoying like never before. That day we talked about the great response to the groundbreaking anthology, her former writing student Cherie Renee Thomas had just edited Dark Matter, a century of speculative fiction from the African diaspora, which included work from all of us. Black speculative fiction was coalescing into a movement, and Butler's vision made her the movement leader. Her unwavering, unclenching study of our uglier tendencies made her a social prognosticator. If only we would listen. In Dawn, in 1997, she was humankind's trajectory towards self-destruction and created an alien species that tries to save us. In her novels, Parable of the Sower, 1993, and Parable of the Talents, 1998, she predicted our national decline down to presidential slogan, Make America Great Again. And in her final novel, Fledgling, 2005, she reimagined horror by creating a mutated vampire whose melanin allows her to walk in the light and makes her a target to the older, pale-skinned vampires who want to destroy her. During our visit, we asked her how she felt about being described as a pessimist. First, she joked in a faux surprise as if she were taken aback. But she then circled back to the truth with a sigh. Look at us. Look at us, she said emphatically. We're not really that long term. Nearly 20 years ago, Butler told us how she believed as a species we were destroying ourselves, pointing to our lack of action against climate change. She said climate change was already claiming lives in Africa and would claim more in the years to come. What I've been harping on in the past 5 novels is how can we make ourselves a more survivable species, she said to us that day. How indeed? On Inauguration Day in January 2017, I published a blog post calling Surviving President Trump, Lessons from the 1960s and Octavia E. Butler. I included a photo of an autograph Butler inscribed in Parable of the Sower to my late mother, civil rights activist Patricia Stevens. Due to Patricia Stevens, due and a better future to me. That photo is powerful spirit of two women who fought the same battle on two fronts. My mother with her multiple arrests and trauma from state violence against her in the 60s, and Butler with the searing power of her art in the 70s and beyond. The irony, of course, is that the parable of the sower or sower is about anything but a better future. It's a dystopia with the urgency of now that feels more like a documentary chronicling the crumbling of our society before our eyes. Teenage protagonist Lauren Olema, who has more wisdom than the combined adults in denial, around her, is forced to grow up too soon. Lauren faces a world teeming with violence, poverty, unemployment, and death, and she must do all this with a disability gift called hyperempathy syndrome, which means she literally feels the pain and dying of others around her, even if she's the one who must injure or kill them. Parable of the Sower encompasses so many themes that recur in Butler's work. The reluctant heroine who must take charge because of her gifts and integrity. The brutal impact of hierarchy and the seeds of the hope embedded in her character's earthseed religion, which teaches that God is change and that planting and action are the antidote to terror and tragedy. In Parable of the Sower, one earthseed verse reads, "Belief initiates and guides action, or it does nothing." That sense of urgency is what scholar Ayanna Jameson, PhD, said compelled her to devour everything Butler had written after a white colleague told her to read Butler because she thought she had hyperempathy syndrome. Jameson had never read a Butler novel, but she was hooked after the Parable of the Sower. It calls us to action so we can realize alternatives are possible, says Jameson, founder and director of the Octavia E. Butler Legacy Network. The optimism and pessimism is really pragmatism. What are the concrete things you would need if aliens were here? What would you need if there's no clean water or access to gasoline or the fire department doesn't come? What if we didn't have all the middle class services we take for granted? If there's no public education, Jameson says, that's horror. Is already a factor in the lives of the marginalized folks and women. It's not like you have to wait for the apocalypse. During our 2000 interview with her, Butler recalled hearing criticism from black readers that her science fiction wasn't focused enough on race. Her first novels, Pattern Master, written in 1976, and Mind of My Mind, written in 1977, were about telepaths and shapeshifters who can inhabit the bodies of different races and genders. She used metaphor to focus racial and gender power dynamics. I got it from other people during the 60s when you were supposed to be so terribly relevant. Why do you write that stuff? It's not relevant. You should write something that's more politically relevant to the struggle, she told Steve and me. Her answer to the criticism was 1979's Kindred, about a contemporary black woman who gets caught in a time loop that keeps returning her to the slavery era. Butler called Kindred a long, depressing ride when she talked because of her immersion in the research on slavery. But she said it is her most taught and most popular book, and it's often the first book I recommend to readers who have never read Butler's work. Kindred reached one reader like a thunderclap. The discovery was like a love letter from our ancestors, says Thomas, who is also the author of Sleeping Under the Tree of Life. As a history major, reading Kindred opened new portals of thinking for me, new ways of seeing myself. the role of history and the ways the stories we tell ourselves within families or as a nation shape and reshape us, she says. The experience with life-changing Octavia once said that she did not need to see a black role model to create her work. The desire, her imagination, and determination were always present, but I can truly say that I needed to see Octavia's gifts on the page before my own paths became clear to me. My husband knew Octavia for about 25 years, and for 10 of those years in Los Angeles, where they lived within walking distance of each other. He and his previous wife traded dinner invitations with her. Octavia didn't drive, so he often drove her on errands or to book events. We both believed that Octavia, had she lived, might have been astonished at how many black women speculative writers are thriving in her wake. N.K. Jemisin, Nnedi Okafor, Niecy Shaw, Nalo Hopkinson, Tommy Adamaya, Andrea Hairston, Ibi Zobi, Chasia Burke, Jewel Gomez, Karen Lord, and more, Steve says. I would hope that her spirit understands that she made a difference. And this article was written by Tanneville Du, and she is an award-winning novelist and educator. So on to another article. Let's talk about the 10 things we're talking about. Number one, the politics of fashion, gender pay equity, and a woman's right to choose have heavily infiltrated the nation's political discourse and worked their way onto the list of talking points for nearly every 2020 presidential candidate. But for designer Iris Barbie Boner, aka At These Pink Lips, feminism isn't simply a trend or way to gain favor. It is her career. She's dressed women in entertainment like Cardi B, Mary J. Blige, Salt and Pepper, and rapper Cash Doll in her bold, expressive garments that speak to women empowerment. With each new client, she's acquired more followers who understand that the future of this country is most definitely female. Number two, an inclusive curriculum. For more than 500,000 Connecticut public school students, history class is getting an overhaul. The spring members of the state legislature voted in favor of making African American and Latino studies a required part of the curriculum starting in 2022. The bill stems from the testimony of young people who stated that the achievements of blacks have been missing from their studies for far too long. Number three, family travel transformed. Charlie Salter Atimo, MD, has re-envisioned what it looks like to travel with kids. Along with her husband and brother-in-law, the practicing pediatrician launched Cater to You Baby, a one-stop online shop that allows parents to order supplies for their holidays with children and have them shipped directly to the final destination. The team is also rolling out vendor machines that carry products for consumers on the go. Number four, an undeniable impact. HBCUs have served as a cornerstone of the black community for more than 180 years. A new study from the United Negro College Fund proves just how much African American students have benefited from their presence. HBCUs punching above their weight evaluated institutions by state and territory and concluded that despite being underfunded, HBCUs award more than a quarter of all black bachelor's degrees and nearly a third of STEM degrees earned by black students. Number five, preserving our places. The Exeter Club once played host to Who's Who of Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, the decades-old landmark, seen as a beloved gathering spot of African Americans, is facing an uncertain future. In May, it was added to the list of endangered historic places by the National Trust of Historic Preservation. In June, the building, which is in disrepair, was purchased by a new owner. Number 7, Dancing for Life. Philadelphia's Quinn Center for Performing Arts isn't your typical dance center. The city's new fixture, founded by licensed social worker Erica Lynn Waller, connects young boys and girls to the art while also promoting cultural awareness and sensitivity around adoption and organ donation. Proceeds from recitals help benefit local related charities. Number 8, spreading the wealth. When Denise Woodard was looking to secure capital for her cookie company, rapper mogul Jay-Z stepped in with the cash. Through his firm Marcy Venture Partners, the newly minted billionaire led the 1 million seed round for Partake Foods. The New Jersey-based business sells allergen-free goodies in more than 400 stores nationwide and looks to expand to 1,000 before the end of the year. Number 9, never too late. This month, Ava DuVernay's When They See Us is up for 16 Emmy Awards. Though the exonerated five has received acclaim for their resiliency, Syracuse New University student Jalen Nash wants more for one of the wrongfully accused. Kevin Richardson is a former trumpet player who dreamed of playing in Syracuse's band, Nash. A rising senior started a Change.org petition to award Richardson an honorary degree from the university. And number 10, restoring rights. Washington, D.C. Councilman at Large Robert C. White Jr. introduced the Restore Vote Amendment Act of 2019 so that those who are or have been incarcerated can cast their ballots. The goal is to achieve equity for those with criminal past. And we're actually going to stop right here because we have ran out of time for today's episode of Essence Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. And you have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm Nicole Hunter, and the content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long until next time.